ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवद्गीता 4:10 दीप्तराग भयकृधा मन्मयामं उपाश्रिता बहवो ज्ञान तपसा पूतमद्भावं आगता. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me, and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attain transcendental love for me. This verse is certainly a slap in the face of the impersonalists. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up. Okay, good. I didn't know. Just making sure. Because Krishna here is saying me, how many times is he saying me? Making it very clear. He's talking about himself, not something else. Purport. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep this same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation. They become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such persons are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all of these three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of a personal identity, and the conception of void that underlies the frustration of life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulations of the regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental will of God. According to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the science of devotional service, adau shraddha tata sadhu sangata vajana kriya, Tato narta nalitti shat tato nishta ruchi tatha. Atasaktis tato bhavau bhavas tata premam yadunchati. Sadakkanam mayam premna pradhara bhave vavetkanamaha. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. By execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness in self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And this taste leads one to bhava, the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. In the prema stage, there is constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So, by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can attain to the highest stage, being freed from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustration resulting from void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shikare Namah. So, Srila Rupa Goswami is given here in his Bhakti Vasandita Sint, the roadmap of how one can actually get out of this material existence. Of course, if you think this material existence is just fine, you're quite happy with it, and you have no need to practice Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a process for those who would like to live in a different existence, a different state of existence than one in which you undergo repeatedly birth, death, old age, and disease, while in the meantime you're suffering threefold miseries, miseries of the mind and body, miseries caused by other living entities, and misery is caused by natural disturbances. If one is not content to suffer this way and that, then one should practice the self-realization science so that you can actually awaken your eternal blissful nature, which lies far, far beyond this material existence. There actually is another nature. The scientist would make us doubt that there's another nature, but we are doubtful about them, actually. We're very doubtful about them. As I was describing last night in our program, I attended one function of the scientists back in around 74 in Gainesville, and they were talking about this wonderful theory of black holes in outer space. And I inquired from the esteemed professor that, is this a theory or a fact? And he said, I think it's a fact. And then a few more questions came in, and I got another one, and I said, throughout the history of science, we have seen history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some time, and then in due course it is defeated by another theory. So how do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another one? Of course, that was a very loaded question. He had just said it was a fact and not a theory, and now I call it a theory, and he actually fell for the bait and said, I hope it is. Because then we will be making progress. So my challenge is this. If the science book that you study now, 10 years from now, will be considered untrue, You see? Then why do you even consider the future science book to be true? Because in another 10 years, it will also be considered untrue. See, this is called relative knowledge. It's considered true, or it might be true, in a person, in a particular time, place, and circumstance. But this is called dur ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. Dur means bad or false. So you can't really take shelter of this scientific knowledge. Because it's not solid. It's built upon sand. There's one poetry that castles made of sand are washed into the sea. So if we build our castle of this material culture on this empirical science, which is based on a very flimsy platform of mental speculation, then we have a civilization which will be baffled. Mogasya moga karmano moga jnana vichetasaha rakshasim masadim chaiva pakritta mohinam shittaha. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by atheistic and demoniac views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their culture of knowledge, it is all defeated. It's all defeated. So, if you want to have something which will not be defeated, shall not be baffled, then you must take that knowledge which does not change. That knowledge is coming from the great enlightened teachers and ultimately by the Supreme Person Himself, the original enlightened teacher, who is giving this actual knowledge. Right now, we're very proud of our speculation. We think we know so many things. But just note down what your favorite speculations are now. In 10 years, go back and look at it and you'll have a whole different set of speculations. The point is your speculative knowledge of what is the absolute truth and how you can realize the absolute truth is very flimsy. It's not solid. This is why one requires a bona fide spiritual master who's presenting. Bona fide spiritual master means he is presenting the Vedic science as it has been passed down for millions of years without any change. For the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, we can enter into the esoteric understandings of the Vedic wisdom. Actually, it's an insider's secret. Actually, what's going on, what the real meaning of these teachings are, it's a real insider's secret. That's why it's called Raja Guhyam. This is the most secret of all secrets. If you really want to know what's going on, then you have to become in the mood of bhakti. If you just try to have a speculative, empiric, analytical, interpretive analysis of what's going on here without actually taking up the mood of devotion, then sorry, you're never going to realize what's going on here. You see, you'll never realize what's going on. If you really want to know what's happening right here, right now, in this universe, you have to hear it from a bona fide spiritual master. You have to hear it from realized devotees of the Lord who understand the truth as it is. Your brain is in a state of illusion right now. Your brain does not have the power to penetrate the coverings of the material nature because it is under their influence. It's under their grip right now. It is a case of the blind leading the blind. We are being led around by false teachers who are cheating us. Therefore, we cannot know things as they are. We require a bona fide spiritual master, one who is actually giving us the knowledge which originates with God Himself. If we have such an enlightened teacher, we hear from him submissively, we don't try to argue with him. We actually agree to hear the teacher, what he's saying to us. We try to absorb it, not blindly, of course, but with a view to understand and overcome all of the, by submissive inquiry, to overcome all the gray areas of misunderstanding and confusion. So everything makes sense. Somebody asked me today in an email, they said, is it a matter of using your own brain, or do you just blindly accept what the spiritual master said? That was the question. You just blindly take what the guru says, or do you use your own analytical brain? I told him both. Actually, it's both. By using your own clear, by clarifying your own intelligence through purificatory system known as Bhakti Yoga, it's also called Buddhi Yoga, the yoga of the intelligence. This system will actually clarify your brain. It'll take all the crud out of your brain so you can analyze things with incredible intellectual power, actually, that you never had, you'll be amazed. If you will take advantage of this Hare Krishna mantra, you'll be amazed at how profound your intellectual abilities become. How you can go in and minutely analyze even the most subtle philosophical conception. You can see the weaknesses of it, the strengths of it, and through this process of sifting through different explanations of reality and what's true and what's not true, if you combine chanting along with philosophical pursuits, you'll find that you become a very philosophically intelligent person who can actually distinguish between reality and illusion. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. This is the Srimad Bhagavatam that dharma projita kaitava tarparamo nirmatsaranam satam vejam vastavashivadam tapotrayam mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune krite kimbara ishvarah sadyo hridya virujyate krititi bhi shubhis tachana. Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects all forms of religious practice that are materially motivated. Scummy type of religion, greedy, lusty type of religious practice, which is rooted in materialism. The first thing it does is it kicks it out, says, get out of here. We don't want pseudo religion here, cheating religion. Kaitava dharma. That is immediately kicked out. Selfish, greedy, pseudo religious practice. Scum religion. It's immediately kicked out. Only pure religion practice, which is selfless. Pure religion means to become selfless. Not that I go and I try to trick God into giving me this and that. Try to flatter God into giving me this and that. That is kicked out of the Bhagavatam. Completely rejecting all religion that is materially motivated, this Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. So this is indeed profound knowledge. It is not a blind acceptance of a dogma. It is a practical experience of a vision, of a comprehension, of an enlightened perception which actually rips all the anxieties out of your heart and throws them in the trash. All that fear, all that illusion we go through here in Tampa, Florida, it's extricated from the heart by this process. You actually become an enlightened being, not some pseudo-enlightened being. Yeah, I'm God, I'm making the sun rise and making the moon set, I'm God. This is bogus spiritual enlightenment. Genuine spiritual enlightenment is when you actually become completely free of anxiety. Not pretending you're free from anxiety, putting no fear on your, no fear bumper sticker on your car. But I'm talking about actually achieving the state known as abhayi, fearlessness. That is actually achieved by a person who has realized God and realized himself, who actually realized. They become fearless, absolutely fearless. They can face even the most devastating condition and not be disturbed by it. So that is what the bona fide spiritual master teaches. He teaches the student how to become so advanced in Krishna consciousness that not any even the most severe, devastating anxiety of this material world can even affect him to the slightest degree. This is what the bona fide spiritual master teaches. But one has to be very sincere to learn. The bona fide spiritual master doesn't charge you any money, but there's one thing he does tax you heavily on, and that's your pride. You have to be willing to give up your pride. Your money you don't have to give up. Money you can use in a spiritual way. Spiritual master doesn't charge you some fee to initiate you, but there's one thing he requires, and that's humility. You have to become humble. Very humble. That's why most people don't want to have a spiritual master. But they want to become humble. They want to maintain their pride. But, as it is stated, pride cometh before the fall, and pride will keep you fallen also. Christ says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Actually, they inherit much more than the earth. That was an understatement. Blessed are the meek, for they shall possess God. He becomes their personal property. Look at Mother Jasoda. Krishna became her personal property. Look at Arjuna. Krishna became his charioteer. The Mayavadi philosophers, they want to merge and become God. But our Vaishnava program is you become greater than God. Because God becomes your subordinate. Like Arjuna, with having Krishna as chariot driver. Just shut up, mother. Tying up Krishna with the ropes of her loving affection. So, why settle for some cheap imitation self-realization process? When you come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, you should be very eager to actually understand what he's saying. Even one moment's association with a bona fide spiritual master can liberate you from this material existence if you will take advantage of it. In that one moment, in the Sanskrit, it is called lava matra. That one moment happens to be, by our modern day calculation, only 1/11th of a second. If even for 1/11th of a second you can probably take advantage of the presence of a sadhu, a saintly devotee of the Lord, a bona fide spiritual master, even by that 1 second, what does the shloka say? What does the scripture say? Sadhu sangha, sarva shastra kai. In all the scriptures it is stated. Sarva, all, shastra, scriptures, kai, stated. It is stated in all the scriptures, sadhu sangha, lava matra, sarva, siddhi hoy. By even one moment of association with a sadhu, a bona fide devotee of the Lord, you can achieve all perfections. Sarva, siddhi hoy. You can achieve all perfections. So people think, well, I got to do so many asanas, I have to do pranayama, I got to, you know, turn on my kundalini. Forget it. That is a system for previous ages when people lived to be 100,000 years old. They had tens of thousands of years to perfect that system. It's a very, very slow system of spiritual enlightenment. We don't live long enough to do it in this age. But in this age, simply through the process of bhakti, which Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita as being the topmost yoga system, yoginam api salavesham, man gatena taratmana shadhavan shadhavan
shadhavan
yogadite ma. Yes. Sama yukta tamo mataha. So Krishna said, of all the yogis, he who always worships me in devotion is the highest of all yogis. So if one can simply develop this desire to love God. If one can simply awaken the desire to develop love of God, then immediately you surpass all types of yogis. Immediately surpass all types of yogis. And all types of bogies also. So everyone is invited to take up this process with all seriousness. Don't waste your human life. Take this process with full seriousness. You'll be glad you did. So we can stop now and ask if there's any questions.
Well, I'll just comment that Prabhupada was so clear in his purport about what's going on in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
Especially he mentioned here that one takes intoxication and accepted these visions, hallucinations as spiritual vision.
Yeah.
This seems like a really common thing.
Yes, that was certainly... The boys at 26 Second Avenue were all LSD voyagers who thought they were having spiritual vision. Very common thing. Papa came in the 60s, hippie movement. Everyone thought by taking LSD we're having spiritual visions. Becoming God by dropping a pill down our throats.
So, yeah. This culture is such a drug culture. People are mainly drinking coffee and taking operas, sleeping pills, and then alcohol, and then
now all the psychiatric medicine. Now the MDs are prescribing, you know, anti-depression medicine. All this, people are becoming hooked on drugs. They can't
Ritalin
even live without their medicine now.
Ritalin for the kids. The kid is a little active in school. They say, "Oh, give him this pill."
It's crazy, absolutely crazy. They're being, turning everyone into drug addicts. It's amazing, even we see people who join our movement now, they can't live without pills, psychiatric pill. They get misled by these doctors.
My question is, Prabhupada mentions the bona fide spiritual master quite a few times in this purport.
Yeah.
And, I'd like to ask you, what's the difference between a spiritual master who is initiating disciples on the service of Srila Prabhupada and a rhythmic priest who is initiating on behalf of Srila Prabhupada?
Yeah. So, there is one philosophy that Prabhupada is the last acharya in the line of succession. And henceforward, all the disciples of ISKCON will be the disciples of Prabhupada, the initiated disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Of course, that's not what Prabhupada told us. He told us in the final year that they would be the disciples of my disciples. They would be his grand disciples. He told us that. So, the idea that people can only be disciples of Prabhupada and they cannot be disciples Prabhupada's disciples is not what Prabhupada told us. This is a concoction. So if one invents a new idea which did not come from the previous acharya, then one has actually cut oneself off from the previous acharya. Those persons who take such initiations are not actually Prabhupada's disciples. They're no one disciples, actually. Prabhupada himself also states in many places in his purports, even if we didn't have the final conversations that were given in 1977. And actually, even, it's funny, they came out with one paper called The Final Order, which was the July 9 letter, but they failed to note, and they say, we call this book The Final Order because this was the final order that Prabhupada gave on initiation. But that means they didn't read the Vedabase where in October Prabhupada gave an order on initiation. Just days before his departure, he said, "Now I will stop initiating." Because Prabhupada was still initiating through the Ritviks, through the 11. He was still accepting disciples through them doing all the functions. And just days before his departure, he said, "Now I will stop initiating. And you, the deputed ones, you can initiate." He was actually going to turn over and let them initiate their own disciples in his physical presence for those last... That's what he said. He said, "In this condition, I will not initiate anyone." You could say, well, that means he wouldn't do all the functions, but he was already not doing all the functions of the initiation. His disciples were, those 11 were already doing all the functions. So when Prabhupada said, "I will now stop initiating," it means, because those people were just being initiated by the 11 as Prabhupada's disciples after the July 9 letter. But now Prabhupada said, "I will stop initiating." And he told Jayapataka, you as a man, he said, you can initiate him. He was saying, you can initiate him as your disciple. So this Rithik idea is a completely concocted idea. They say that, you know, that only Prabhupada is qualified to initiate disciples. But why don't we take Prabhupada's opinion? You see, in the famous purport to Kiva Viprakijanashi Shudra Kene Noi, Srila Prabhupada explains, quoting from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, that gives it double potency. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that the verse is saying anyone who knows the science of Krishna can be a spiritual master. The Riptics say that means only you can be an instructing guru, not an initiating guru. That's their argument. But Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur stated, and it was repeated by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, in this verse the word guru is equally applicable to the Siksha Guru, the Vartna Padarshika Guru, and the Diksha Guru. So the word guru, it means anyone who knows the science can become guru. It means he can become Siksha Guru, he can become Vartna Padarshika Guru, and he can become Diksha Guru.
His choice.
He has that power. He has the blessings. The authorization of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is saying if he knows the science of Krishna, he can be Diksha Guru, he can be Siksha Guru, he can be Vartna Padarshika Guru. Another defeat of this Rithik philosophy is when I was a young brahmachari traveling on Sankirtan in Key West.
Was this in Joshua?
I was traveling with the Miami devotees, Miami Sankirtan. I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I had one idea as I was sitting, as we were going down the road, and I was sitting in the Sankirtan, and I had this idea. And I wrote Prabhupada about it. I was thinking, well, you know, just Swami this, Swami, all the boat, you know, the Mayavadis are out there making disciples. It was a big thing in the 60s, you know. They put up posters, they get big crowds of people, they have so many disciples. I was thinking, well, you know, what if I could post myself as a spiritual master and attract people to me that here's a spiritual master, and I could make them Krishna conscious. The Mayavadis are using the name of guru to lead people to hell, but what if I could do this? If I could take the post of guru and make them devotees. So I asked Prabhupada about this. Pretty bold thing, a young brahmachari, you know. But, you know, he was my father, and I just asked him, you know, without any fear. So Prabhupada said
you mean like using the title?
Huh?
Using the title.
Yeah, but actually, yeah, that was the idea. I was presenting myself as a spiritual master, advertising myself as such, in the promotional material, etc. I even gave an example of how I could advertise myself to Prabhupada. You know, come and hear Sankarshan Das become enlightened by his words. And this, you know, I mean, I gave a whole thing where Sankarshan Das is presented and profiled as a spiritual master to the people. And to see what Prabhupada thought about that idea. And I gave all kinds of things, you know, I can do this, I can write books, and, you know, a whole list of things, this sort of program, that sort of program, to go along with it. Prabhupada said, I'm very pleased by your proposal. He said, now you consult with the GBs. He said, I am returning to America in mid-April. I hope to meet with you at that time. That's how pleased he was. He wanted to meet with me personally. He was very pleased. He said, now you consult with the GBC for the realization of this proposal. And as soon as I did that, they said, don't write Prabhupada any more letters. You can't go see him either, which is ridiculous, because Prabhupada said he wanted to see me. My GBC man said, he wants to see all of his disciples. That GBC man fell down later on, by the way.
That sounds like a Mayavadi philosophy anyway.
But I had my order. Prabhupada encouraged me that, yes, you can. And I asked him in another letter if I could actually... I asked him if the desire to be guru was spiritual. Actually, I was very bold. I said, is the desire to be Jagat Guru spiritual desire? Prabhupada said, yes. I said, a spiritual desire. It's all right to desire for Krishna in this way. And he gave me some ideas on how to qualify myself for it also, to be a spiritual master. He said, no material desire, no karma, no sex desire, no karma, no yoga, no jnana, all material desire is zero.
Zero,
yes. So Prabhupada actually encouraged me. This is a spiritual desire to be guru, and he told me that I could present myself as guru, take this, you know, actually be presented to the public like that. And he said, consult with the GBC to realize it. Of course, the GBC was really angry at me for writing a Prabhupada letter to Prabhupada like that. But later on, 20 years later, then I again approached the GBC, and they blessed me to be a spiritual master. So the Rithiks say, you know, I said, well, Prabhupada encouraged me, I could be a spiritual master. Who am I supposed to listen to you? Who am I supposed to listen to, you or Prabhupada? Prabhupada personally encouraged me. Desire to be guru is spiritual. Yes, I approve of you presenting yourself as a spiritual master. Now, who am I supposed to listen to, Srila Prabhupada or the Rithiks? I mean, give me a break, you know. Who's my guru? Krishna can't desire his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Who is my spiritual master? Who initiated me? Who has saved me from this material existence? His divine grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Asta Tarasadashi Srimade Sri Bhaktivedantati Nandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Not Krishna can't decide. I call him Krishna can't decide. He is not my spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada is. And Prabhupada confirms it in the books. He says, the one who is now the disciple, it's right there in the Bhagavatam purport. He says, one who is now the disciple, he is the next spiritual master. Papa told us in Mayapur, this is not just an obscure lecture, this is during the festival, Prabhu, when everyone was there from all over the world. This is a very significant lecture when all the devotees had come from everywhere. Papa gave the whole example. He said that how in the presence of one's spiritual master, even if one is qualified, one does not initiate disciples. He says, he made that clear, that even if one is qualified, one does not do so. He said that now we are 10,000. Then we will become 100,000. Then we'll become 1 million. Then we will become 10 million. He said there will be no scarcity of acharyas. It's right there, and you can hear that. You can go get the MP3 collection. You can hear yourself with your own ears. The Rithiks say acharya. There is only one acharya for ISKCON. Period. The divine grace Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, 10 million. We will go to 10 million, and there'll be no scarcity of acharyas. Plural. So who in the hell are we supposed to listen to? Srila Prabhupada or these splinter groups who are envious, who don't want to surrender? Actually, the person who wrote the book, The Final Order, when he was a boy, teenager, growing up in Krishna consciousness as a member of the youth forum at Bhaktivedanta Manor. It's interesting to note, even though he was a Gujarati boy, he never called his parents mother and father. He insisted on calling them by their first name. Even his American kid, which is not as cultured as Gujarati culture, I never called my parents their first name. But he insisted on this as a boy growing up. And he's the one who's the acharya of the Rithik movement. You see, he doesn't want to accept anyone as an authority over him. He's actually placing himself on a higher level than Srila Prabhupada. Because he is taking Prabhupada's teachings and he is twisting them to suit his own purpose. He is presenting himself as the acharya and actually nullifying the teachings of Srila Prabhupada by legalese, so-called transcendental philosophy, but it's just cheating, it's playing words, playing word game with them. He'll take, and he's very good at, he's a very expert attorney, like an attorney, and go in and twist, you know, a very expert word juggler. He can go in and razzle-dazzle your mind about, you know, this thing and that thing. So this Ritvik idea is completely bogus. Prabhupada again and again, there's so many places. I mean, I just named a few of them. There's so many places. So many letters where he's, you know, he personally encouraged me, I could be a spiritual master. He says so many places how one can initiate after the spiritual master's departure, then one can initiate. Clearly states it. He said that his disciples would do that in conversation with one gentleman in Detroit. There's so many places in the Vedabase where you can see again and again and again. One lady in London said, Swamiji, can you accept a guru just by reading books? Because that's what the Ritviks say. Just all you do is read the books. Of course, the books are very essential. There's no doubt. We don't want to minimize that. But you know what Prabhupada said? He said, no. Not just by reading books. He said, you have to have a guru concrete. Don't try to make a guru in the air. Concrete guru is required.
That's an interesting example, concrete.
So why is that? You may say, well, why is that necessary? I mean, why did Prabhupada say that? Well, the fact is, if your spirit, if you take as your spiritual master the part of the Acharya, you can't really get definite personal instructions from him. You can speculate, I think that he's giving me this instruction. But you can't definitely know that he has given me this personal instruction. You can never know. Of course, if you're a completely pure devotee, then you could. But the reason we need a guru is we're not pure devotees. And we're not able to receive a clear, absolutely for sure, there's no doubt, transmission from within the heart. We need an external spiritual master.
Even the sadhu sangha can be confusing without the confirmation of our spiritual master.
Yeah. And so we really need to have a living spiritual master there who can say, okay, this is what I want you to do. And who can actually point out our faults to us. That's a very handy thing if your guru's departed. Therefore, there's nobody who can really chastise you, point out your faults. For those who want to hold on to their pride, it's a great opportunity, a great way to do it. So the living guru is actually required. The concrete guru, as Prabhupada said. See, you can actually point out, you see, this you're doing good, this aspect of your personality is very good, and this aspect of your personality is nothing but scum, rubbish. You see, you can actually distinguish what's good in the disciple and what's bad in the disciple. It can help you cut the crud out, you see. Sadhu means one who cuts also. One who cuts through the hard, hridaya granti, the hard knot in the heart. So Prabhupada was very heavy with us sometimes. How he pushed us out the door, practically whipping us, distribute books. Where is that sense of urgency now to distribute books and all, you know, so with such great intensity as it was when Prabhupada was here, pushing us out the door to purify us and to bless the fallen souls of this planet. So actually have that push of the bona fide spiritual master who's your absolute authority. You have to do whatever he says. Of course, that person has to be pure. That's one reason the Ritvik philosophy gained popularity, is because so many spiritual masters fell from their position. But I ask you this. How many marriages end in divorce? Does that mean we abolish marriage? So many gurus have fallen from grace. Does that mean we abolish the guru-disciple relationship, the age-old tradition?
I think that's what happened to the Sikhs.
The Sikhs?
Hundreds of years ago, they said, no more gurus, we just worship the book.
Yeah. It doesn't work. You have to have a concrete guru. It's a very important thing, because I mean, just look at the Bhagavad Gita. It's so obvious. Tad vidhi pranipatena paripashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam gyaninastatvah darshanaha Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. That means you're there with a living spiritual master. And say, okay, well, this is the book. I mean, not to... The books are important. They're vital. We depend on the books. There's no doubt. But this book, this verse is not talking about approaching a book. Just approach the book, inquire from it. My dear Bhagavad Gita, how can I best serve you? Well, you can read it, and it's not like that. Actually, you approach the spiritual master, you receive a direct instruction. This is what I want you to do. I want you to open a center in Tampa and make it a grand success. You know, something like that. I know how much, just from my own experience as a person who spent 35 years following this process very strictly, I know how important it is, those personal instructions that I got in letters and that we also, that Prabhupada gave to all of us in his lectures. But I know especially those personal instructions that I got from him. In those personal moments when I associated with him in various situations, how important they are for me as a disciple. So someone who's never had that personal contact, who's never had that personal instruction, they are at a disadvantage. Therefore, they need to have a person that can be their guru, who can be their connection. That they've met that person, they know that person personally knows them. This is an essential thing, and the Vipic people are actually trying to destroy our movement by trying to take away the Guru Parampara. They're trying to destroy this movement. They're just like the Mayavadis. You may say, well, this is really a proper topic for class, but for me, it's just like Prabhupada always talked about the Mayavadis. It's how much time he spent educating us about Mayavadi philosophy. So I feel that we also need to educate people about Vipic philosophy. Because it's become a very formidable enemy of our movement. So we really have to educate our members, and this is going to be posted on the internet, this lecture. It'll really have to educate our members. What is the fallacy of this mythic philosophy? Any other questions? Okay. We'll stop here. Raja Vidya, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.